Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 4, Demetrius Tate, Origins 1. In the beginning, Demetrius Tate had a mother, a father, two older brothers, and one younger sister. The cruel truth is that he never truly gave them much thought. All they had to offer was a pleasant and simple life. His father made paper. His mother made shoes. The children assisted both their parents as commanded. It was a loving household that neither aspired to greatness or worried about destitution. To Demetrius, it was rather dull. He would read stories and listen to tales by firelight and feel that his proper family upbringing was failing him. He did not want to become a paper maker like his father, nor a cobbler like his mother. It is safe to say that the one thing that Demetrius Tate always wanted to become was a great magician, to be able to control the elemental forces of nature with his very gestures, to learn the unknowable secrets of reality, and to perhaps even create a few secrets all his own. Unfortunately, Demetrius was not born with close access to a great magician to learn from. All the universe saw fit to provide him with for knowledge was a huckster. However, as luck would have it, the huckster's speciality was magical wares, and so it was that by the age of 11, Demetrius had left his proper little home to become a huckster's apprentice. Bartimaeus was the huckster in question. He cut a fabulous figure that would inspire any youth longing for adventure that this was someone to follow. He was just tall enough to be thought of as tall, a fact that was compounded by the large top hat he wore near constantly. It was the same brilliant shade of green that matched his dapper coat, complete with tails, golden buttons, and shiny golden patches on the elbows that gave the coat a sense of showmanship. He carried a straight cane that he skillfully used to gesture at his wide range of products, all in their glass bottles. He was round in the middle, but not too much more so than any man of his age, and he had skinny arms and legs that he gleefully capered upon. Bartimaeus's face was a giant red circle. Jutting out of its center was a bulbous nose that rested on a thick, waxed, and curled auburn mustache. From underneath his top hat jutted out thick auburn curls. At least they jutted out from the sides. Time had eroded away the curls that had once tickled his brow. His eyes had a perpetual sparkle to them. They were the same green as his coat and hat and were alive with electricity. To the young boy and to many of his loyal customers, they hinted at power and well-won secrets. He was also blessed with a rich and powerful voice that could ring out like a church bell calling parishioners to worship, thunder like a summer storm, and soothe like a gentle breeze. He was of that particular level of famous that, wherever he traveled, eager customers would flock to the side of his wagon to attend his stall shows and purchase his various wares, tinctures, and elixirs. However, he was by no means famous enough that if he remained stationary, those same customers would come seek him out with enough regularity to prompt his settling down. He recognized both that truth and that it would be more likely that familiarity would breed contempt and he would be run out of whatever town he had decided to call home. The bitterness in Bartimaeus's voice, when he explained what could happen if they did not travel, made it clear that he had suffered such a fate at least once in his career. Demetrius found his task simple enough. He cleaned the wagon and cared for the two mules that pulled it. He made sure the various potions and ointments maintained their proper colors and thicknesses. Runny ointments and creams could be used to augment the potions, and as potions congealed, they could form the base of a new ointment. Good magic potions, it seemed, were just under the consistency of syrup. However, it was the colors that separated the potions. Therefore, part of Demetrius's education was learning how to create dyes from a variety of wildflowers and other plants, none of which had any actual curative properties. Yellow needed sun blossoms for best results. Purple, made from kingflower, looked the most elegant. The gloomily named widow's foil produced the brightest blues. Lover's lips was essential to a passionate-looking red, while cherry tulips created a dye that was quite bloody in appearance. Knowing the shades was important because as long as the magic potions looked correct, Bartimaeus could convince his customers that the results would be as desired. People will believe a red-tinted love potion colored with lover's lips petals. Something dyed with cherry tulips is better for curses and other vindictive purposes. If the appearance was correct, it never seemed to matter that the majority of the potions shared a common pungency. In magic, dear boy, Bartimaeus was fond of saying, as long as the visual is a pretty one, no one minds if it smells of curdled milk. The only way Demetrius disagreed was that he noticed sometimes the more something stunk, the easier it was to claim the magic contained within was strong. Bartimaeus's care over visuals extended over how they dressed. Bright colors and shiny fabrics were the norm. Costume jewelry and colored glass rings to add an air of exotic wealth. Multicolored feathers were sewn into much of what they wore, usually dyed chicken feathers to keep the budget from expanding too much. In truth, Demetrius thought they looked more like a pair of actors rather than traveling magicians. Well, why shouldn't we? We are giving them just as much of a show. Both magicians and actors ask their audience to believe in the untrue. The only difference is the audience knows when an actor's performance begins, pays to watch from the start, and rewards them with applause at the end. Our audience should never know, a free one at that. And, if we are lucky, we'll be rewarded with payment at the end. Just once I wouldn't mind a little applause. And in truth, had he focused less on touting his potions and salves, which were more likely to elicit a rash rather than any magical results, he might have received his fair share of applause. He was accomplished at sleight of hand and other forms of folk magic. He could turn a bird, pigeons, chickens, or ducks, nothing as large as a goose, into a bouquet of flowers, and then into a puff of smoke, and back again into a bird. He could make coins dance and jump from person to person, cut and mend colored cloths, braid them without touching them, and even blend the fibers together to form a multicolored scarf. Admittedly, he had yet to perfect a smooth and quick method for breaking the fibers apart and reassembling back into their original forms. That was what his assistant was for. And so they traveled, with Demetrius learning the various cons, pitches, and tricks that Bartimaeus had to teach. By the middle of their second year of his apprenticeship, Demetrius figured he had learned almost all Bartimaeus could teach. After all, there is only so much mystery behind colored pigments, sleight of hand, and tout calls. Come one, come all, and purchase one of the life-changing magical tinctures from the all-knowing master of Mr. Mees, Bartimaeus. He has tapped into the secrets of the five sacred spirits, and he ponders the texts of the eight great gods. He offers his legendary learnings and transformative talents to illustriously improve your lackluster lifestyles. Bartimaeus was a firm believer in the powers of alliteration and drawing in crowds. Demetrius called accordingly, and crowds did indeed gather. Normally, the pair would stop wherever Bartimaeus declared, "Here there are likely to be as many people as cows." After such a declaration, Demetrius never mentioned that in the various ranches they peddled their wares that cows existed in far greater numbers than people. But recently Bartimaeus had driven his two mules hard into darkness. That this time there was a set destination was obvious, even if it was unsaid. Demetrius never learned the name of where they arrived, but he knew it housed Genevieve and her girls. As far as cities went, this one was large enough to be deemed a city, but small enough to not be intimidating. For Bartimaeus, the city not only had enough trade and customer support his own financial needs, but also had enough wealthy individuals to warrant a proper house of ill repute. Still, being 11 and relatively protected despite being a huckster's apprentice, Demetrius did not catch the meaning. "You mean like a thieves' guild?" "My boy, the only thing Genevieve and her girls will steal from you is that which you will be glad they took from you. And coin, I suppose. But then again, we don't work for free, so why should they?" This did not add any new meaning to the mix, a fact the huckster put together by looking at the boy's face. The hefty man rubbed his thick mustache into his cheeks. "Good gracious, you don't get it, do you?" The mustache rubbing quickly turned into the scratching of thinning hair. "Ahem. Well, you know that special dance that only a man and a woman can do? Well, actually, if he's lucky, a man and a woman and two women and... But
Then there are some that prefer a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, or any real combination thereof. You see?
Demetrius shook his head. Bartimaeus was growing an increasingly brilliant shade of scarlet as the words tumbled out.
Well, you see, when children your age go to bed, they sometimes want a cookie, or perhaps a glass of milk, right? By that same regard, as an adult, you have needs and wants that can't easily be filled with chocolates. One of those needs is a need to be close and warm. But being close and warm isn't always a state of being that can be readily had. It can be difficult, right? Like building a fire.
Oh, good gracious, can it ever be? He wiped his brow and continued.
So then, if you wish to warm but are having difficulty getting warmed up by yourself, then there are places you can go and have the people, well, for me it would be the women, warm you up themselves. But this warming up will cost. You pay for wood? Do you ever?
Bartimaeus let loose a hearty guffaw and gave his apprentice a wink and an elbow. In return, Demetrius stared questioningly.
That wasn't a joke.
No?
Then, well, no, you aren't paying for firewood, but the warmth isn't the warmth that comes from a fire, but rather one that comes from a willing and preferably buxom lady who, for a certain price, will take your... And then with her, the two of you will...
Wait. Do you mean coupling?
Yes, coupling, yes.
Coupling for money?
Yes.
So we're just going to some whorehouse?
Good gracious, boy, you know whorehouse, but not house of ill repute.
That's what's wrong with children these days. No artistry to your language. And besides, there is a difference.
A whorehouse is where you go if all you want is some tired and likely abused pitiful creature who thinks fornication is a goal to be accomplished and a few quick thrusts and grinds.
A house of repute is... His eyes looked towards the heavens for the appropriate words and could find none fitting.
It is an entirely different thing. And Genevieve's, well...
It is a perfume-scented paradise draped in close-fitting sheer silk.
Bartimaeus looked down at his miniature companion, whose eyes had grown as wide as saucers.
And by the time we leave, my dear boy, you just may be a man.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at DeadlyTroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at deadtroubadour. Once again, thanks for listening. If you are enjoying the book, please share it with your friends. And please tune in next week for the continuing adventures of the Deadly Troubadours.